They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Welcome back.
Oh gosh, we're
sorry. Yes, we are, Elliot. Welcome back, faithful listeners. And let's get this out of the way right away. We've had some technical issues the past week or so, and we are right now in a hotel in Illinois recording, and that's not a bit. That is where we are.
Yeah.
So if we sound funky, if
brought
you
missed
us,
brought to you by the American.
Yeah, sponsored by. That is the reason why.
And also, happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Yes.
Hope you're, if you celebrate, if you do, hope you're having a good time. Maybe a Friendsgiving. Is that still a thing? Do people still do that?
Tons of people. I went to a Friendsgiving just last Tuesday.
There you go. Yeah. So, Nathan, I have two questions for you, for banter. The first one is just kind of a general opinion type thing, because a few weeks ago I was in class and the people were talking, and the subject was basically reading stamina, how long people can read for.
Okay.
Because if you didn't know, a lot of people, a lot of students, even in like high-end universities, really struggle to read, to read books.
Yeah.
And so people were going around the room talking about their experiences, and of course, this being a graduate class, there were a lot of TAs, or people who were in teaching positions, and one of them said that in their first class as a icebreaker, they asked, like, what's your favorite movie? And about half of the class said they don't watch movies because they're too long.
Wow.
So they just watch YouTube or TikTok or whatever's out there. I don't know. What's your opinion on this?
I think a lot of the times the same people who say movies are too long, I don't have time for movies, are the same people who will sit and binge watch a show for like 4 hours. Like they, and so I think it's less about the length of a film as the length of the story in a film. That they can watch 4 hours of a TV show, or they could sit on their bed and watch like an hour of TikTok videos. But because each of those is like, in the TikTok sense, right, like 30 seconds long, or a television show like 30 minutes, 40 minutes long, it feels like less of a commitment. Which, I don't know, I guess, you know, everyone's ability to watch movies, like that's fair, that's whatever. I think it's unfortunate that they can't sit down and pay attention to some of the great stories and things that can be told through movies. But I'm kind of like the opposite. Like I can sit and watch 4 hours of a movie because I know at the end of the 4 hours, the movie will be done and I'll have experienced a complete story. But I really, really struggle watching TV shows because it's like, wow, I have to watch 8 hour long episodes. And after each hour, like there's still more. That, to me, feels like a way bigger commitment. And if it's a longer show, like, you know, The Office, where it's like, oh, there's 26 episodes per season.
Well, those like, episodes are half an hour each.
I know, but it still feels like a huge commitment to me. Because, like, at the end of every episode, I'm like, oh, I've got so many more before this thing is done.
Yeah, I can do it all. I can do a movie or a show. I'm more willing to give up on shows for that reason, that if I'm not into it by, like, the third episode.
It's just too long.
Yeah, that's a pretty significant... You're betting a lot of time on the proposition that it's going to turn it around.
Yeah.
I also think... I mean, no judgment here, That's just the way things happen. But it is unfortunate. I think that, and if you're one of those people who can somehow listen to us prattle on about movies for like an hour and a half, I would just encourage you to keep trying. Stamina is something that you build up over a long period of time.
Yeah.
So like maybe start off with some VeggieTales, build up from there. Charlie Brown, did the Charlie Brown specials.
Yeah.
That's like a clean 45
okay,
minutes.
Okay, what's your second question here, okay. Elliot?
My second question is more directly movie related, and I've already previewed you on this question. It's that, if you didn't know, Wicked is out right now. It's doing crazy numbers. Well, not crazy numbers, but very good. It's doing very good.
Respectable numbers.
Yeah. Yes. So, a lot of people seeing it. A lot of people enjoying it. And I know that you're a music connoisseur, so there's a bit of a conflict in these screenings because some audience members are singing along. Because, of course, this is an adaptation. A lot of people already know all these songs, and they're in there. They're singing in the theater. I find that to be 100% objectionable, but I don't matter because I'm never going to see this movie, much less in theaters. You matter, so what's your take?
Well, I'm probably not going to see this movie in theaters either, because you would have to pay me to see a nearly 3-hour-long movie that's part one of two, starring two people who I have found annoying to the nth degree in every interview I've seen them.
I have a quarter in my pocket.
Great.
Is that enough?
No.
Oh, dang.
No, it's got to be at least more than the price of the ticket.
Oh, yeah. But anyway.
I would agree with you. I think that is very rude. Most theaters do special showings for movies with music where they invite you to sing along. And I think it's especially rude because, like, I haven't been to a ton of musicals in my time, but, like, I've been to musicals when you guys were in plays in high school, and I did go to Chicago when it came to Ames and was there for a little bit. And I think you would be kicked out if you went to, like, a Broadway musical and were singing along with the people on stage singing it.
It's true.
So, like, it's not even that in the form these people are familiar with the play in, it's appropriate to sing like along to the things. So I think I can understand the desire to sing along to a song that you know and have loved for a long time. And I understand that it's like, well, in a musical showing on theater, right, you don't want to sing along because the people are right there on stage singing along with you. I don't feel like we should let the separation of, oh, well, they've just recorded it, so it matters less. Like, they still recorded it with the intention of you listening to it as opposed to you singing over the top of it in the context of the movie.
Mm.
So yeah, I think that's kind of rude, and I'm a little baffled by people doing that, because again, like, it wouldn't be appropriate in the spaces that they would be used to seeing it.
I don't know, maybe they think that it's more appropriate because there's no one to... Yeah. I agree. I think that's a little unfortunate, especially since, like, not everyone in the audience has signed up for that. For And, like, presumably, you not singing does not detract from your experience. Singing may enhance your experience, but not singing presumably won't detract from your experience, but singing may detract from someone else's experience.
Yeah.
So I would just attack it from a utilitarian point of view.
Wow, so we're really, our banter section has just been us besmirching people and saying, hey, stop doing this.
Yeah, shut up. One last thing, business. It's, just calm down. I have seen Gladiator 2, and there is a review up for it on the blog.
Oh,
give that a read. I won't spoil my thoughts here, because I know everyone's eager. Everyone's, right now, probably like, oh, get out of here, Spotify.
I have to type it
out. The movie blog. So yeah, go ahead, like and subscribe. Actually, I don't think you can do that for this.
Keep checking it.
Yeah.
All right. Let's jump over to the review of the movie that we're reviewing today, the long-awaited.
The review of the movie we're reviewing today.
I picked this one. We're doing The Banshees of, I should have double-checked the pronunciation on this. I think it's Inisherin?
Yes.
Okay, great. The Banshees of Inisherin. It is a 2023 movie. It came out recently. I think it's 22, because, well, maybe 23. We don't know. Anyway, it was very lauded. We discussed it positively at the time. I believe it might have been your favorite movie.
It was.
Okay, it was Elliot's favorite movie of that year. It was, I'm pretty sure, in my top five list. We both enjoyed it quite a bit. I had kept thinking, I had not rewatched it since we saw it for the first time in theaters, and it just kept coming to my mind as such an interesting movie, and so I wanted to revisit it. Pretty much the only reason I ever revisited a movie at this point is for the podcast, so I decided, why not make it an episode? Why not discuss it? If you're not familiar with this movie at all, it follows two friends on an island off the coast of Ireland.
Actually, that's what the... It's a fictional island, and the name Inisharan means an island of Ireland.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that. Wow. Good job, Elliot. We've spent our 2 weeks prepping for this in very good form. But anyway, it follows two friends. One decides that he wants to commit his life to bigger things than sitting around in a bar talking about nothing with his other friend, so he cuts him off. The other friend is... funny. The other friend is understandably upset by this turn of events, and so the movie kind of follows them as they're going through kind of this friendship breakup sort of thing. It's directed and written by Martin McDonagh, who is a director I love. He's only made four movies.
Yeah.
Seven Psychopaths, In Bruges, Three Billboards, and this.
I think that's right.
And I'm a big fan of all of his movies, so this is the first one that we're reviewing for the podcast. Elliot, I've been yammering on for so long now. Let's start talking about the actual movie. Let's give your first thoughts and opening impressions.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably not a big surprise that I really, really enjoyed this movie. I did go in there open-minded as usual, willing for... open to the idea that the movie was not as good as I remember, but that is incorrect. The movie is just as good as I remember. I actually enjoyed it. This is my third time watching it.
Mm.
And I think I've enjoyed it a little bit more every time that I've seen it. I think this movie is fantastic. It looks incredible. Really unique soundtrack. Really contributes to things. Great performances. It is so funny and so devastating. And the way that it holds those two conflicting tones at all times, I think, is it's masterful. Like, I could not do that. And I'm not saying, like, oh, and I'm such a good writer, I should be able to do that. But I think that most people would not be able to do that.
Yeah.
That is a serious balancing act to strike. And, yeah, I think that for me, what really does it is the characters. Mm. How sympathetic each and every one of them is. No one is an antagonist here, with the exception of the police officer, who I really hate. But, yeah, everyone is so... it's just so easy to root for each and every one of them, even as they're doing these terrible things to each other. I think what I said to you after it was done the first time we saw it, because we saw this in theaters, and I may have mentioned this when we were talking about it in our year in review, is that this movie has a pitch-perfect understanding of how and why hurt people hurt people.
Mm.
That all of these reactions are not coming from a place of malice, but from a deep well of pain and confusion, and it's so tragic and compelling to see the ways that these very human foibles are realized on the screen, because at all times you're like, yes, I completely understand this, I know how this feels, but you're always just so devastated, because you're like, this is not the way.
Yeah.
There is healing out there, and these people, for reasons that we all, I think, can completely understand, it's out of their reach. Or it's not out of their reach, but it's not something that they're pursuing.
Mm.
That people just get stuck. People get stuck in these mental ruts. And yeah, I think this movie is fantastic. I'm really excited to gush about it.
I get, well, you've stolen a lot of the best ones, and I think you're 100% right that I enjoyed this movie more this time, I think, than the first time, and it is for all of the reasons you said. I think all of the characters are very easy to root for, and...
Except for the police officer.
Except for the police officer, and the things they're going through, yeah, it's so... I must have, like, gaslit myself into thinking this movie had a happier ending than it did. Because when the movie ended, I was like, wow, I'm really, like, upset that that's how it ended. I seem to remember someone... I don't know, I think I did genuinely just, like, trick myself into thinking, like, oh, someone had, like, a happy ending. And I'm like, no, not really. Like, I think his sister is one of the few characters you could say kind of has a happy ending. And even her, it feels more like an acceptance of defeat than, like, oh, I'm really coming into something amazing. Yeah, I think let's start by talking about some of those characters that we've got. Colin Farrell playing Patrick. Brendan Gleeson playing, you're going to need to help me here.
Colm. Colm Sandelari.
We apologize to any Irish listeners for our accents. And then, I should know her name. I'll be able to cut this out.
It's like Siren or Sheehan or something.
His sister.
It's pronounced nothing like the way
it's
spelled.
Yeah, it's an Irish name. I think it is like Sharon or something like that. Siobhan?
Ooh, I think that might Siobhan? Be it. Yeah.
It might be Siobhan. Yeah, Siobhan played by...
Carrie Condon.
Good job, Elliot. You're really bringing it. You're really bringing up the slack.
I spent some time on the Wikipedia article for this movie not too long ago.
Good job. So. Carrie Condon playing Siobhan, and then Barry Keoghan playing...
Dominic.
Wow, he's good at this. So yeah, those are kind of the four main characters that we spend most of our time with. And they are all so fantastically done. I think I was especially struck this time by how good Colin Farrell was. That Patrick is such a kind of pathetic character. He is dull.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt a little bit, real quickly. Is he... I couldn't tell or not if he was maybe supposed to be somewhere on the spectrum.
It's possible. He's certainly... The way he's interacting with the world is interesting, I guess. But... I think he does such an amazing job of portraying that in a very, very human sense. That he's trying so hard in so many of the scenes. And you can see him with whatever he's trying to do. That, like, early in the movie when he is kind of trying to abide by Colm's, like, hey, don't talk to me at all. You can see him really trying his best to... not talk to this friend that he's had supposedly, I mean, given the size of this island, for probably his entire life. Like, it seems like a friendship that he's had very consistently for an incredibly long time. And so him trying his best, and then near the end of the movie where he's made a turn and he's being a little more antagonistic and taking matters into his own hands in a way that is not resolving the situation in any way. Again, it's played so well that you're, like, you're rooting for him even as he's doing things where you're like, oh, don't do that. Like, please don't tell the guy that his dad got over by a bread van. Don't do that. And I just think it's so amazing how well it's done. And then, yeah, everyone else. Barry Keoghan, again, I think... His character is someone that it would be very easy for it to be kind of a stereotype and just played as so goofy that it's impossible to empathize with them. Because he is kind of a weird character. His introduction with the stick and the hook is goofy. And he's clear, like, he's kind of creeping on Siobhan a little bit. But I think Barry Keoghan does such an amazing job of, and I apologize if that's not how you pronounce Barry's last name, but he does such an amazing job of keeping it very human and something that you're rooting for them, even as you're like, that's not going to work. Mm-hmm. When he asks Siobhan out, the way it's played, it's, you know that she's not going to say yes because she shouldn't, because he's weird and there's nothing really to be gained there. But it breaks your heart because you are fully invested. And then I think Siobhan and Calm are two amazing characters who clearly are more intelligent than the other characters. They're more aware of their setting and their context and what they want to do with their lives. But again, it's so heartbreaking seeing them unable to like form that into something that's positive and helpful, mm-hmm. especially Calm, that he's got ideas. They're just not coming through.
Yeah. I gotta say, Colm really hit me this time around. His whole character, and of course, Brendan Gleeson does a fantastic job with him.
Yeah.
But, so again, some plot context that you may not have. I guess you could say this is kind of the hook, or that it's always in the trailers, this ultimatum that Colm eventually puts down, whereby every time Padraic talks to him, now that they're on the outs, he, being Colm, will cut off one of his fingers. And it's completely possible that I'm just overanalyzing this. Next week, we're going to get some overanalyzing.
Oh, yeah.
That's a little teaser there. But I was so struck by the fact that that's his ultimatum, is destroying himself. Rather than lashing out at Padraic. And the more I looked at it, the more it seemed like every time he starts to come alive, Colm that is related to pain, his own pain. That when Padraic, this is a great scene because Padraic has enough, he's drunk, and so he accosts him in the bar. And there's a great line reading from Colin Farrell, and I know this is going to sound silly, but he just yells, like, talking to me now, are you? And this is such a silly thing to get really invested in, but just the frustration and the pain that's in that reading, man, it really hit me this time around. But anyway, he then goes on to berate him, and then afterwards, Colm says, like, that's the most I've liked him in a long time, that when he's being berated, when he's experiencing suffering, that's the time where he comes alive. And we all know that it's not because he likes suffering, it's because he's gotten to the point of depression where any feeling whatsoever is something that he treasures.
Yeah.
And so, man, I'm legitimately getting a little thick in the throat just talking about it right now, because that is so rough, but so true to life, that being in that space of just complete emptiness, of despair.
Yeah.
He talks to a priest, very funny, a few times. And the thing that keeps on coming up is, how are you doing with despair? And that's where he's at, that he's completely empty. And so these moments when suffering, when a feeling, be it pain, physical or emotional, peers through that empty void, I mean, that's the kind of thing that people in those spaces respond to. Because, I mean, it's just anything to show that you're still alive, that you're still capable of feeling.
Yeah. I think the other thing that's really amazing about Calm is that so much of it is played in kind of the background. Mm-hmm. That it's not brought to the forefront, that you are able to kind of just intuit so much of his struggle from these discussions that he has with the priest, where the priest says, you know, how's the despair recently? That, and from some of his explanations, I really loved when what he says when he's talking to Siobhan, when she comes to, that she's fed up and she comes to the bar and she's like, why are you not talking to my brother no more?
Oh, that was terrible.
But he can tell that she gets some of what he's going through. And so I think he asked her, I have it in my notes, do you get lonely? And it says so much. I think firstly about him, that he's like, he feels lonely on an island where it seems like he knows almost everyone, because he feels isolated intellectually and he feels isolated relationally despite being close to some people, because he's not actually close to them. And I think it says so much about Siobhan that she's like, no, that I love Siobhan. I think she is such an incredible character because, like I said at the beginning, she's clearly intelligent in the same way that Calm is, and she's able to see that, you know, she's surrounded by a lot of people who are very okay with a meager sort of lot in life. And she is wrestling with whether she's okay with that. And I think a lot of her responses to things, I love the way she interacts with her brother, that she clearly loves him and wants the best for him. And I think one of the questions that I wrote down that just brought the movie brought up, that was a lot of the characters talk about being nice. That Podrick is like, he's not smart, I'm nice. And Dominic says too, that he's like, you're the nicest, like, you're one of the few people to be nice to me. That the movie to me has almost this question of being like, okay, when should we give up being nice? Like, when does nice run up against a wall where it's just not going to fix it? That, like, no amount of Podrick being nice is going to make Calm like him again and enter back into a relationship. And I think the human urge when faced with that sort of wall is, I'm going to take the low road and I'm going to hit this guy in the knee until he has to like me again. And I understand that urge so much. Like, I get that urge where you see someone take a lower road and you're like, this high road thing is not working. This is not getting me anywhere. Being nice is not getting me anywhere. So why would I continue doing this? But it's not going to, like, no amount of hurting another person is going to make them like you. Mm-hmm. And no amount of hurting another person is ever going to make people, like.
And it's never going to make you okay with not being liked.
Yes. Yeah. That Podrick's attempts to fight back in telling the man that his dad got run over by a red van, which is a really funny scene. All it does is it makes Dominic not like him anymore. And Dominic leaves him and, like, stops hanging out. So it's, I think it's so compelling because I very much relate to that sort of idea of, you know, when is it my turn to do what these other people are doing to me? Like, when do I get a fight back? And I feel like Siobhan, I just relate so much to this. Like, I said that she has kind of the only happy ending. She ends up leaving the island at the end of the movie, and it feels like the movie is saying, like, you just have to leave the situation. That, like, no amount of nice is going to fix a thing, so maybe you just have to leave, which is a tough... Again, I was upset at how sad the movie ended, because I just so desperately wanted to be good, and I guess I wanted it to be happy so much that I tricked myself into thinking that's how it ended. But yeah. I don't know what we're... I mean, we're just talking about...
Well, another thing that you brought up there is... Again, like, I think this movie has such a fantastic understanding of hurt.
Mm.
And one of the things that is part of that is the way that it trickles down through Podrick and into Dominic.
Yeah.
That Podrick is hurt, and so he chooses to hurt others, be it amusingly, like the guy who he tries to scare off, or not so amusingly, like with Colm, or crucially, in that scene where he says to Dominic that this is something he's done, and Dominic's like, that's the meanest thing I've ever heard. And Podrick responds with hostility. That, again, that this the hurt that began with Colm and spread to Podrick now spreads to Dominic. Because that's just the way it happens, man. That hurt and lashing out just snowballs.
Yeah.
And, I mean, like you said, there has to be a point where you just have to withdraw. I mean, you just has to end somewhere. Otherwise, yeah. Someone's going to end up dead.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think, again, the characters are just all so well realized. They're so well written that, you know, we've talked now for like 15 some minutes just talking about the characters and, you know, things that we found very empathetic in them. So I think it's a testament to how well written this movie is, and this is kind of how I feel about all of Martin McDonagh's movies, is I think the characters are so well realized and they have so much nuance and complexity that they have so many of these human elements that make us root for them, and they have so many of the gnarly elements that we see in ourselves that we're like, man, I wish that they could fix that, because, you know, I wish I could fix that. Like, I wish I could be better than, you know, this character is. So, yeah, I think maybe to pivot a little bit, I think I would, we've mentioned this bread van scene. I think this movie also has, and you mentioned it in your opening thoughts, I think this movie is so funny and does such an amazing job of walking a tightrope that the humor never undercuts when the movie is trying to, you know, really move you. That the humor only serves to make you enjoy the movie more, that it serves to lighten the mood a bit. I think if there was no humor in this movie, it would be one of the most depressing movies ever made.
It would be like The Father.
Yeah, it would be a tough movie to get through. But I think with the humor, like those scenes with Colm and the priest, this scene with the bread van guy, a lot of the scenes with Dominic, I find Dominic really funny. What do you suppose this pole is for? Are you hooking things about a stick's length away? And then I find it a very devastating scene, but his end thing after Siobhan turns him down, he's like, I gotta go and do a thing over there that I was gonna do over there. That cracks me up. So I think the humor is really well implemented and is genuinely very.
Yeah, it's perfectly deployed. It's not like at those moments, like in your Marvel movies, where something truly meaningful is supposed to be happening, and then people are making jokes about, I don't even know them. I shudder to imagine what they're making jokes about these days, because it's been a while since I've seen Marvel things. But yeah, I was thinking that there's a joke where, spoiler alert, eventually it transpires that Patrick, now so far along in his hurt, will try to burn down Colm's house, regardless of whether Colm is in it or not. And so he does this, and then later on he's writing a letter back to Siobhan, and it's being narrated, and he said, over a shot of the house burning, he says, no other news, nothing else to report. And I remember thinking in the theater, like, man, that is one of the best dark humor moments I've ever seen. Because, this is just one of those witchcraft moments of writing that some people, truly talented people, are able to create, where things that absolutely should not work, that should be a moment where, a Marvel moment where you're like, oh, this is just completely out of place. But somehow, through some kind of sorcery, It's just the right moment and just the right amount that you're just kind of like, and then you like realize, oh man, this is not a time to be joking and time to be laughing. But I think maybe if I could do a little bit of theorizing here, the difference is that the movie is in on the joke. Rather than it just being a joke between the characters, like at the end of Quantumania, when they're making a joke about MODOK dying, he says, like, I'm an Avenger now, and it's played for laughs, I think. Yeah. This is a clip that I've seen. But that's a joke between the characters, but this is a joke between the movie and the audience. That the movie is kind of like, it's kind of like, oh man, this is a little rough, and so it slips in something for you, and then it gives you a little wink there. Yeah, that may not be the case. I mean, it's probable even that I'm just...
I think that makes sense. I do think the movie has very much... The tone of the story feels kind of like a fable that you're being shown. It feels very fable-esque to me, because there are some heightened reality moments. I do think it's a little unrealistic that someone would threaten cutting off their own fingers. And certainly the way the movie shoots the shears that he uses to cut them off feels very much like something that would land in, like, Macbeth, that you would see the knife that he's going to use. That it feels a similar way, that it's a bigger story, that it's communicating bigger ideas.
Yeah.
Which I think is really fun. And I think, speaking of that sort of thing, the cinematography in the movie is great. It helps that they're on an island that is beautiful. It's so green. It feels greener than any place I've ever been.
It's probably greener than it is in real life. I mean, again, it's a fictional island, yeah. But...
I love that. I love... A movie should look better than real life. That's I don't true. Go to the movies to see, you know, this hotel room in Illinois that looks terrible. It looks fine. We thank you to the Americans for hosting us again. But the movie looks so good. And, yeah.
Who's the cinematographer? Who do we got behind the camera?
I don't know. Elliot Jeepers.
It's important.
Okay, let me Google it real fast. Ben Davis.
Ben Davis. Not someone I'm familiar with, I don't think. But well done, Benjamin. Fantastic work.
Do you have anything else to add about the cinematography?
No, I this is one of those moments where I wish I was better versed in, like, the terminology. Or just, like, the mechanical know-how that I could understand on a deeper level. Besides just, like, it looks pretty. To know why cameras are placed where they are and how that contributes to the movie. And sometimes I do give it a swing, but in this case, I think it just looks pretty.
I think sometimes that's all cinematography is trying to do. I think it looks, it looks really good.
Interesting to note that this movie is set in 1923, which I did not remember, and I actually was thinking, like, 40s or 50s, but there's a shot of the calendar where it's 1923. And there are multiple references to the Irish Civil War being fought just across the water to them. Like, they can hear gunshots sometimes. That will be between the IRA and the Free State, I think. Sure. Something like that. And I've never been able to quite decide if that's supposed to be like a parallel, this national schism between... some infighting between two groups who should be close, ostensibly?
I think it is, because I think the two reasons I think this is, I think, one, the scene where the police officer, who, as we've already mentioned, is not a great person.
Is monstrous.
Yeah, is talking to Calm, and he's talking about, like, oh, I'm going to go over to the mainland because they need extra people for, like, executions. And he gets asked, like, oh, is it IRA or the Free... Like, which side is it? And he's like, it doesn't. Like, the fighting is all that matters. Which I think is kind of, you know, I think a lot of the times when we're forced to choose a side, our side that ends up chosen is a little bit arbitrary, and then we decide that's the hill we're going to die on, as opposed to ever saying, like, hey, maybe let's not, like, maybe the schism is not as important as getting along. And then the movie ends with a reference to the fighting and with Calm saying, is it Calm or is it, I think it's Patrick that
Patrick says,
you know, I think there's some things that you just have to take to the grave. Mm-hmm. Like, some things you just have to fight until the day you die. Which I think is a really terrible mentality. I think that's really bad. And again, it upset me because I was like, man, I wish you ended in a better place than that.
Yeah. And another thing that... about the parallels between this story and the Irish Civil War is that it's people hurting themselves.
Yeah.
And obviously, the conflict between the IRA and whoever was on the other side is a little bit more substantial than people being dull or people just being bad drinking company.
Yeah.
But the point remains that these kinds of... internecine, not 100% sure if that's the right use of the word.
Sure.
Fighting, but like interfactional fighting is destructive for all parties.
Yeah.
Everyone's hurting themselves as much as they are the other person or the other group.
Yeah. I think it adds to the fable nature of the movie.
It definitely adds, like, to a sense of surrealism or dreamlike quality to it, that just every now and then you'll just hear the sound of gunfire.
Yeah.
Or something coming across the way.
Yeah. We're getting close to the end here. Elliot, do you have any negatives to speak of for this movie? I have some, so I can share them.
Yeah, because I thought I did. I struggled to remember it.
Well, I think, for as much as I praised Dominic, and I think the performance is really great, I do think of the four characters, he is the one who kind of gets the short stick, and...
Literally.
Yeah, he has easily the worst ending of any of the characters. And I think he... And there's other characters like this in other Martin McDonagh movies that they kind of just serve to illustrate a point, and the movie doesn't dive super deep into what is happening with them, which is frustrating when it feels like the other characters are so rich and full of so many things. And so on this rewatch, I just think I was a little more aware that Dominic... Yeah, just doesn't get as much screen time or doesn't get as much characterization as kind of the other characters. But that's really the big thing. I did also want to say, the way Colin Farrell delivers the line, "Oh, Jenny," when he finds his donkey dead, almost made me instantly start crying. Because I knew that she was going to die, because I had seen the movie before. And so when she did die, I was like, oh, that's tough. And then the way he said it, I was like, gosh, that really sounded like... Like, someone really genuinely just ripped apart seeing something. And I thought Colin Farrell was just incredible in this movie. And the rewatch just served to even further increase my respect and amazement at this performance.
Yeah, he's got it in the voice, which I feel like sometimes, this is like just... This is just apropos of nothing, but I feel like sometimes actors can neglect voices. That I feel like their expressions are really good and really expressive, but then when they're actually talking, their voices just sound so flat and uniform. But yeah, Colin Farrell, like I said, with the whole, his line reading of talking to me now, he's definitely, he's bringing it all together. Voices, expressions... Gestures.
Wow, what a master of the arts. Yep.
Master of his craft. I can't remember what I didn't like about this movie, so it must have not been too important.
All right, well then let's get to ratings. Yeah, I really, really like this movie. I liked it even more this time than I did the first time I saw it. I think I'm going to give it a 9.3. Yeah.
All right, yeah, I've said what I want to say. I've left it all in the court. I think this movie's masterpiece. I'm going to give it the coveted A+.
Wow. All right. Well, now let's just jump over to... We're going to keep jumping like we're on a pogo stick here.
We're like frogs up in this his house.
Yeah. We're feeling froggy, as that one character in it... Not character. That one person on Survivor keeps saying.
Okay.
My recommendation for this movie is going to be a movie that you can see right now in theaters you pay for a ticket. It is A Real Pain, directed by Jesse Eisenberg, starring Jesse Eisenberg, as well as written by Jesse Eisenberg, pulling Orson Welles triple threat over here.
Or M. Night.
Yeah, or Quentin.
Oh, mother.
Anyway, it's in theaters right now. It follows Jesse Eisenberg and Kieran Culkin playing two cousins who are going on a Jewish heritage tour of Poland that was gifted to them by their late grandmother. It is, much like Banshees of Inisherin, it is two incredibly human, complex, nuanced characters going through a journey of maybe not self-discovery, but just kind of... figuring out some of the nuances, that they're two very different characters, but they grew up together and they're now seeing each other for the first time in a couple of years, it seems like. And it's just, it's amazing to watch them play off of each other. They're both incredibly well acted. I found the movie to be very affecting, and I very much empathized with kind of both of the characters, but more Jesse Eisenberg's character and his struggle with... being more charming and charismatic and outgoing, wishing that he could be all of those things. And so I found it to be incredibly well written. I thought it was really interesting the way it tackled the pain that both of the characters were experiencing, I thought was really interesting, and I found the framing of the movie to be really... I just found it to be a really, really interesting movie. I haven't stopped thinking about it since I saw it. I think it is well worth a watch. I'm already upset by how much it's going to get overlooked once the Oscar season comes, because it doesn't look like it's going to be coming away with a lot of stuff besides a supporting actor nom for Culkin. But that is my recommendation. Go see it in theaters if you can. If you're listening to this too late, you know, go to your library, check it out, and find if it's streaming somewhere.
Yeah, maybe Canopy will have picked it up.
Maybe. I love Canopy. That's the best streaming service.
There you go. Shout out to Canopy. They do good work over there. I have also seen this. I did not like it quite as much as Nathan, but I definitely really enjoyed it. I second this recommendation. Really made me understand generational trauma in a way that I think I've always kind of... That's a concept that's always been a little bit foreign to me, but...
I don't want to... Not to jump in here, but absolutely to jump in here. I do think it's also... There's been a lot of movies about generational trauma recently. Everyone grew up and started making movies about it. I think this is one of the freshest and most unique versions of it that I've seen. That I think a lot of the movies I see are just like, oh, my parents were kind of crummy, and so they treated me kind of crummy, and now I've got some issues. This was a really interesting, different take on it. That it wasn't like, oh, my parents were kind of crummy. It was like, oh, my... Like, everyone in my extended family experienced an inhuman amount of trauma. And now, how do I frame my trauma in light of that?
Yeah, all right. Shush now.
Yeah, okay.
Shush like.
Yeah, shush like. Shush like. Shush like, Patrick. Yeah, shush like.
Yeah, sure. All right. There you go. I think that, you know what's even better movie about generational trauma? The Halloween reboot.
Okay, whatever, Elliot. What's your recommendation?
I can't tell you how many reviews I read about that movie that it was like, generational trauma, it's all in there.
Really?
Yeah.
The newest one.
Yeah. Because Laurie was sad, and then her daughter was sad.
That's what I'm saying. I feel like a lot of them, yeah, not all of them, but I feel like a lot of them are just like, oh, this, like, I'm sad like my parents were.
Well, horror movies, we're really getting off track here, but horror movies I found have a tendency... to just, like, put something in a movie and then act like they've dealt with it.
Yeah.
Or said something meaningful about it.
You can say Ari Aster, because that's every single one of his movies that I've seen.
I've never seen an Ari Aster movie.
Well, I've only seen one, but it did that, and it really annoyed me.
Well, anyway, my recommendation is going to be Marriage Story. This is a movie directed by Noah Baumbach, who I like. I think he's a very good director. About a divorce. That's kind of why I chose it. It's for the... coming apart of a bond, but more than that, because it's about, specifically in the context of marriage, modern marriage, and modern divorce, I think. But it's definitely got that same heart of, here are two people in deep, deep pain, trying to navigate that ethically. In relation to each other and in relation to their child. So it takes it, it comes at it from a very human perspective. I think that, yeah, it's got that same gut punch of those moments where it's almost like those moments where you're just in a frenzy and like, you know that you're doing something wrong, that you're hurting someone else, but like you can't stop yourself. Very rough, but very good. Not quite as funny, I don't think.
No, I don't remember laughing at all.
But, yeah, great movie. Definitely give it a watch. Similar kind of ideas being played with.
Yeah, I would second that. I like Marriage Story quite a bit. I gotta rewatch it. Maybe we'll do it for the podcast sometime. Otherwise, I'll never rewatch it.
Well, until then, let us go forth in the knowledge and the security... life is hard and full of disappointments.
Yeah. Once again, thank you so much for listening. We're thankful for you, the viewer.
Absolutely.
On this Thanksgiving day that we're recording. We are definitely going to, well, maybe not definitely, we're most likely going to be back next week with another brand new review, so be sure to check that out. Be sure to check out the blog. Yes. For the review of Gladiator 2, Elliot's thoughts on that, and yeah, we hope you have a great week in between.